sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up.
What do I feel like I'm forgetting something? Hold on a second. Check. We do this? We're doing this? Okay. Hey, welcome. Bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. B Blizzak on Twitter, a.k.a. Shut Up Podcast, Mr. Shut Up Podcast.com on the web. FYI and a reminder for returning listeners that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and also waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded in the late afternoon of August 21st, 2022, and is more importantly brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Hey, all right, okay, all right. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a struggle for me to get through this intro without mumbling or fucking it up, but I'm feeling better, man. Every episode is just, you know, a step closer to practice makes perfect. This is the contradiction here. Speaking of perfectionism, this is a little note I wrote for myself I said, don't stress yourself over an audience that doesn't exist or will exist if you play by some imaginary rules. Bear with me. If you're listening to this, is because you chose to. Not because I enticed you to. Not because, you know, I showed you a little leg or had some dope-ass commercial. Not because I followed all the right steps and executed them perfectly. Like my man, DL Incognito says, I'm sick and tired of trying to make niggas client. Yeah, right. Yeah, no, this is one of the things. What stresses me out before an episode is I want to do this right. Don't get me wrong. I want to treat this like I'm being paid for it. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes I overdo it and forget that. Come on, B, man. This is supposed to be fun. Enjoy yourself, man. This is not supposed to. You're not supposed to. It's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to overcome some of your imperfections, things that I'm trying to get better at. Stop using bridge words. I'm trying to get better at not dealing with perfectionism. I was trying to make it perfect, and this is just my reminder that I know you like shitted on yourself on past episodes, but not in this episode, B Black. Not in this episode. All right, okay. Hey guys, I'm actually a little excited. I'm actually a little excited because I feel like this is probably the most prepared, or I'm happy in the preparation work I put into this episode. So you know, I should have a soundtrack somewhere here, man. But you know, this is like I'm patting myself on the back. Actually, I should put some sound effect. Okay, I'm not gonna do it now, but there'd be people cheering, you know, like yay. yeah, and everything like that. Yeah, so, but, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I guess I'm happy on the, sorry, I'm patting myself on the back for all the prep work that I put into this episode, but, now it's time for the execution, so no sense celebrating the preparation, no sense being happy about how much you studied for the exam only to show up and flop, you know what I mean? Anyways, yeah, I gotta work on that. Okay, so let's get through this beautiful agenda that I wrote for myself. Okay, so, what the fuck? Sorry. What's going on is, yeah, and it doesn't matter. Okay. First item on my agenda is the title of this episode. Knowing Nothing in Life. Now, I kind of like the idea that someone might read this who doesn't listen to the podcast and might think that, oh, there's some deep philosophical shit going on here. And when the truth is, actually, it is kind of deep. It is kind of deep. And the best way I can explain, give you context for the title of this episode is I'm going to read you some poetry by the great poet, by the late great poet. Excuse me. You know what? Very professional. Speaking of good prep work. Yeah. The late great poet, Eric Lynn Wright. And he once said, and I'm quoted, bear with me. Cruising down the street in my 6'4". In my case, it's CRV, but that's, you know, sorry. Back into personation, right. Cruising down the street in my 6'4". In my 6'4". Jocking the freaks. Clocking the dough. Went to the park to get the spook. To get the scoop. Knuckleheads out there cold shooting some hoops. A car pulls up. Who can it be? A fresh El Camino rolling Kilo G. He rolled down his window and he started to say, it's all about making that GTA. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we will pull your car. And here's the important part that you need to hit. And like, I mean, if you know the rest of the words, sing along with me. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. One more time. Because the boys in the hood are always hard. Come talking that trash, we'll pull your card. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. Yeah, beautiful, man. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful verse. You know, man? Okay, look, I'm going to take my time with this episode, but I'm going to take my time with the sermon. This feels like a little sermon going on here in this warm-ass church. Yeah, first of all, the reason why I picked this verse to be my title for this episode is because he talks about the struggles of a young black man coming from Africa via a slave ship, and the white man is fucking, I'm kidding. Okay. No, to be honest with you, after the last episode, it might have been Monday morning, I hit play, and I remember the song just came on, Boys in the Hood by Eazy-E. And and I remember getting to the chorus and say, there's a title of an episode in there. It was just catchy. It was really fucking catchy. But the part that I like is I hate to admit this, is I looked it up. I looked up the meaning of the lyrics on Rap Genius. That's right. I'm a black guy who looks up lyrics on Rap Genius. Kill me. All right. Fuck. Fine. You hurt. You know that this is me just being real with you. Right. And I'm not gonna the whole verse, but the part that I enjoy is the last two verses of the song where he of the chorus where he says, "Knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit." Now at first, I'm gonna paraphrase this, but knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. At first, you would get the impression that, you know what, Eazy is not around to actually explain this himself. Maybe if there's an article about this, send it over to me. But you do get the impression like he's saying that, hey, don't quote me, boy. Don't be fucking going to the police with this shit. Or like, I'm not saying anything incriminating. I'm pleading the fifth, or I'm going to deny. If you repeat what I say in this conversation, I'm just going to deny what I say. Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. That's the impression you would get. But apparently, according to someone on one of the commenters on contributors to Rap Genius, it's more like, if I understand this correctly, is so knowing nothing in life but to be legit is another way of saying knowing nothing in life but to keep it real, right? That's all they know. It's their life is about keeping it real. But and the second part is, don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. It sounds like, don't be amazed by what I said because I'm not saying anything. This is like everyday living for me. This is how I do. There's no big deal Yeah, don't get excited over these words and shit like that. But I don't know. I think it's a combination of both. That's the explanation that I got. But for me, what it means to me, what I like about this is two things that came to mind is, it reminded me of every time I've had the pleasure of hanging out with, and I do mean pleasure when I say hanging out with the criminal elements of allegedly of this world, like drug dealers, strippers, sex workers, whatever, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter, you know, and they talk. They have conversation with each other and they like to talk. And what's beautiful is how I remember being in a situation being around these elements. And I guess they felt I was someone on the inside, but they felt free to just talk freely about the goings on. It's like, man, they buried that body over here, or you can get crack over here. You can buy guns for this person, or that guy, or that girl is involved in sex trafficking. Like, you hear all kinds of shit passing through your ear, and it hit me. I'm like, wow, this is like privileged information. I felt so privileged to be hearing this shit and thinking how, wow, a cop would have a field day, would love to having this information. No, I am not talking about snitching. That's not at all what I'm talking about. I'm saying speaking to someone and they're sharing with you privileged information. That's really what it's about. So I just love how for gangsters, their rep is important. Like like in the song Boys in the Hood, Eazy-E is pretty much bragging about being a fucking criminal. But he ends with, don't quote me. Yo, fuck, you need to pretend like you didn't hear what I just told you. So the second way it applies to me is, or I felt like, yeah, I connect to this, is I think about the conversations I have with my therapist. And it's the realest. Like, it's a practice for myself, but it's the realest I can get myself to be with another human being. At least I'm trying to. It's a practice, but it's the realest. You're trying to cut through the bullshit, your own bullshit, your own lies. And, you know, hey, he touched me on this. Here's the doll. And you know, point at the doll to show you where he touched you. Like, you're revealing a lot of shit to your therapist. Because the point is to be real with this human being, and they, you know, give you some feedback, and like you're having the point is to have a conversation that helps you, that leads you towards growth. So I'm real with my therapist. So I know, like in that session, I know nothing in life but to keep it legit. But at the end, I'm telling myself, don't quote me, lady, because I ain't said shit. The last thing I need is to find out that she has a blog and posting that shit. Sorry, my uncle touched me as a when I was six. Signed, Be Black, quote by Be Black, shit like that. You know, I'm just saying, yeah, that would bother me. But that's the arrangement. That's the I'm sharing with her privileged information, and I trust her to not quote me. And act like, oh my God, yeah, that's the last thing I need to be like, holy shit, okay, wow, that's some fucked up shit that you said to me, but you would just admit it, but yeah, I guess what I just for me in the context of that quote is just talking to a trusted listener. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, I guess I am talking I don't know who I'm talking to. I haven't opened the comments for these episodes yet, But I'm kind of hoping that whoever I'm listening to, whoever I'm sharing this privileged information with, is someone who will benefit from this, basically can relate to these everyday struggles of this human being, this person trying to exist while black in Canada, and just can connect with what I'm saying. And yeah, I mean, help you, like, what's that word I'm trying to say? Each one teach one kind of thing, kind of relationship. Yeah, that's really what it's all about. I'm kind of hoping that whoever I'm connecting to just understands, bottom line, just understands. That's who I'm really trying to get at. All right, okay. What's the, like I said, I made those. When I chose the title? Yeah, catchy, check. So if this is, oh, right. And the other thing I've decided to do is I'm going to make this a slang. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. Especially knowing nothing in life, meaning I'm keeping it real with y'all. That's going to be my other way of saying, hey, I'm just being real with you by knowing nothing in life but to be legit. What did I say? All right. Yeah, and another, like, deep moment for myself that I had is that it made me think, I think about my time when I was doing comedy, and in a way, it was the realest I ever was with an audience. I can't describe it, but it just was. But what bothered me about that moment is how it was real, but I wasn't. People were listening to my comedy and not realizing I was telling them to fuck off. No, not all the audience, but sometimes. There's a lot of, in my comedy, there's a lot of, like, laugh at my pain, and I didn't like, and it didn't feel right that the people who were, I felt responsible for some of that pain would show up and be, oh my God, that was fucking entertaining, where deep down I was feeling like I was wishing that, I wish you didn't laugh. I kind of wish you saw yourself for who you were in that moment. But, you know, it's not here or there, but this is where this podcast comes in. It's my moment. Like, I'm at some point, I believe I'm going to start doing comedy again, just to be funny. But yeah, but you can't get on stage to, like, tell people to fuck off. No, the point is to make them laugh. But the podcast is what I use to give context to my jokes. The podcast is where I'm just being real, man. I'm bucket naked in front of you as an audience. In another world, if I could, I would do spoken word, but, you know, I'm not there yet. Right now, my spoken word avenue is this podcast. So here we are. Okay. Woo, that was a long intro. God damn it, man. Too long. Okay. Chill, B-Black. All right. And don't be surprised if I reuse the slang and when I say, knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. All right, I'm going to repeat that after every segment. Okay. All right. Next on the agenda is... I need to plug the last episode that I did that I actually enjoyed. I actually enjoyed recording it. And if you heard it, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. And I'm plugging it because I had a conversation with a friend about the episode. And I'm realizing that I want to be careful. I want to be careful that I wasn't trying to, when I talked about being a single man, or the journey as a single man, I want to be careful. Is it, maybe it sounded like I was trying to say, hey, women have it better, men have it worse, or vice versa, or the opposite. But the truth is, after a conversation with a fellow single friend, and I ended up realizing that a lot of what we go through is very similar as singles. Like, you know, we're kind of like outcasted. People find out that you're single and they want to hook you up with their closest friend, assuming they like you or not, but they want to hook you up. Like, they assume that, oh wow, you're single, that we need to fix that. Like, it's a state that needs to be fixed. The people see you as something, like someone who's incomplete, and it manifests for both men and women. So I really want to establish that, yeah, no, there's a lot of similarities, I guess. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities in there. But I was trying to find what made being a single male, the experience as a single male, what made it unique. And the one thing through that conversation with a friend that I realized is how, yeah, and ladies, feel free to weigh in, but as men, I find that no one really expects us to, while we're single, to work on ourselves. Sure, they might expect us to, you know, get our shit together, like get a job, get our own place, get a car, being financially stable, like being in a position where you can provide the first two needs of the Maslow table, steps, being able to be in a situation where you can provide for your partner, and if you have kids, like you got to be able to, you know, make money and have your own place and provide security, being that source of protection. But everything else, nah, fuck that. Like dealing with processing past trauma, childhood trauma, nah. That's shit that you bring up in the next relationship that you bring into your relationship and expect the woman that you're with, your partner, to. I'm speaking in, I gotta clear that I'm speaking in a heterosexual context here. It's up to your partner, your girl, your wife, or whoever to fix that for you or to deal with it. I think about a relative of mine, to a clear example. A particular relative, actually he's an uncle, he passed away and it doesn't matter. And this dude used to, domestic violence. He used to, you know, domestic violence. He used to beat on his wife. And wife, so righteously so, divorces him. And I remember during that period of him being single, no one considered that, maybe you should do some self-evaluation. Maybe you should. Motherfucker kept going to church and he remarried. I'm going to assume some woman he found at church because, you know, Bob, it's in the Bible. Man was not meant to be alone. And poor woman, I don't know if he convinced himself that I'm never going to beat a woman again, but this is without any talking to any professional, whatever. He probably just made a commitment to himself that he's never going to do that shit again because it's kind of embarrassing. This woman just divorced me for it. But yeah, he brought the same bullshit from the past relationship to this next relationship, and she ended up divorcing him. And I remember, yeah, and it broke my heart. I remember at the funeral of my uncle just seeing like his second wife being there, and I greeted her, being happy to see her and everything like that. And I was like, you poor soul, you didn't deserve what happened to you. And I'm sorry that someone I'm related to put you through that. But okay, it's not here that, you know, I guess it's easy for me to talk about the dead because what he's gonna do? It's not like he's gonna wake up from the dead, hear this podcast, and come after me like he used to when I was a kid. But whatever. But what I'm getting at is how society doesn't expect single men to get our emotional shit fixed up. Like the only thing you need to do is make money, have a house, financially independent. That makes you a good guy. But, you know, dealing with past traumas, whatever makes you an asshole, fixing that shit. Nah, man. No. Society doesn't expect you to fix that. But modern day women are. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, I think times have changed, man. Times are changing. And it's how, yeah, it's interesting. Society doesn't expect it from us, but women do. So you can see the miscommunication and oh my God, I was in the middle of plugging last episode, but yeah, I'm just clearing up clarifying a point that I didn't get to make or didn't realize I needed to make in the last episode. I'm also going to take the time to send a shout out to a correction that I made. As I said that as a single man, it's only women who've been very supportive, who've been great friends to me as a single male, meaning they've been better friends to me than I would have been to them on their journey as single women. You know, as soon as you hear, you know, your hot friend is single, all you can think, the horns come out like the devil. It's like, word, yeah, word. All right, I'm waiting for your guys to go down so I can get in there. But yeah, no, the lady, the friends, I got to say friends. You know what I mean? Strippers, on the other hand, you know, they took advantage of my loneliness. God bless them, because I know that's supply and demand. I'm not mad at them. I understand how the system works. But I'm just saying, shout out to my friends, my single female friends who, like, helped me through my journey as a single male and supported my venture to just work on myself. Like, they didn't like, question it. It's like, hey, good idea, man. They just encouraged it and shared notes with me. And but I said that only my female friends did that. And the correction I need to make is I did have one male friend who did support me, who was like, yo, it's okay to remain single if you need time, if you want time to work on yourself. Yeah, that's an acceptable reason. He's the one who helped me formulate. Like, at the time, I didn't have the words to say it, but he's the one who helped me find the sentence to say, it's okay to remain single if you need time, if you want time to work on yourself. And that's my man. I'm going to use his nickname, a nickname that I made up for him, and he's probably not aware of, but my man Jay Little. Jay Little, because he plays the fiddle. Doesn't make sense. But yeah, if he hears this, he'll know I'm talking about him. But yeah, man, no, he was the one male friend who was like, yeah, man, yo, take your time, homie, take your time. And I'm paraphrasing, it doesn't talk like that. And last part is, the last episode had me thinking about, yo, at some point, I'm going to need to start promoting my podcast, man. Because I really believe what I was doing, and I really enjoyed myself, and it was dope. All right, okay. Now, I just used up, where we're at, the 25-minute mark, and I'm realizing I need to work on, like, my intros. I feel so much fucking anxiety that I ramble on to uncover, to compensate for the anxiety I feel on the inside. But now I'm on cruise control. Now I'm feeling better. This is like the point of the, like, if this was comedy at the beginning, but the beginning sucks. But once I get the little laughter, then now I'm in the zone. I'm feeling better. I'm closer to the zone. All right. So let's jump to this week in therapy. Hold on. Oh, wait, I forgot to say, knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Regarding what I said about my past episode, don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. All right, this week in therapy. This week in therapy. All right, two things. All right, so in my last therapy session, I was, because my therapist made me realize that when I'm not podcasting, I'm working in IT. And I've been doing that for 20 plus years. I think it's 24 years. Like, I graduated from school in a technical program in CET, Computer Engineering Technology. Shout out to Algonquin. In 97, right? And it's now, hold on, let me do the math here. 2022. So, and I've been working since, like, graduated in 97, been working since 97. And so that means I've been working in IT for, excuse me, maybe I should take that 2 years I took off. Was it 2 years or 1 year? 1 year I took off because I took a break. But hold on a second. Shout out to all you math nerds who did the math in their head. Carry the one. Hold on a second. So what, 25 years? Damn. Does that make sense? 25 years. God damn. Okay, all right, so let's go. 25 years in IT, and I'm realizing that I still suffer from imposter syndrome. It may not be as bad as the imposter syndrome that I felt at the beginning of my career, but there was a moment a few weeks ago at work where I was able to fix something that I was worried I wasn't going to be able to fix, and I remember feeling so fucking good by that moment. And it was reaffirming that, oh shit, I still got it. I felt like the single man who's picking up women, picking up chicks, yeah, whatever, and he still has it. That feeling of still having it kicked in. And I remember bringing this up to my therapist, and she was like, I was trying to say that, see, I don't focus on the negative all the time. See, here, this is me trying to acknowledge that I had a positive moment. But she had me dig into, why did you need that feeling to confirm what you already knew about yourself, or what you should have known about yourself? That was a deep moment. I just needed to highlight that shit. Like there are people who, even when the results aren't, even the results are bad, they can still convince themselves, I got this. Being as soon as, like the last place I used to work, it was the working environment. It was just L's after L's after, I was just getting L's after L's after L's. And a lot of it was just because the environment we were working on just like sucked. Like shit was being held together by tape. It was just the people who knew how to navigate through it is because they created the system, or had a. But I was the guy on the outside, so I didn't know as much as them, and it was just constantly shit just not working, and me being in a situation where I got to explain to my boss, I have no idea why this shit ain't working, and in my head. I take it personally. I start to tell myself that, you know, I start to tell myself these white folks are calling me the N-word. And I was starting to beat myself down and start believing that these results are a reflection of my ability as a techie. Only to realize that, like, if I did have wins, but I wouldn't celebrate it. All this to say that the one win, I was able to fix something, and it gave me a feeling that I hadn't felt in a long time. I'm talking about the last time I probably felt that was probably sometimes in early 2020, if not 2019, and it was after a show that just went well. Like, I remember that the serotonin or whatever those chemicals that are in just kicking in, and I was just feeling good about myself. And, imposter syndrome. All right, this week in therapy. So, okay, let me just get through this quickly. I had three more points to get through. The first one is also something that I'm processing, that I'm working on, is she made me realize that since I started therapy with her, and between the time I was born and the time I started therapy with her, to recognize the fact that I was not my real self. Basically, long story short, the past does not have to be representative of the future. That was just a nice way of saying, or the way I'm trying to understand. I'm now in this phase where I'm trying to recreate myself, self-construct. Rebuild myself, and now I can actually say, like, I'm finally doing shit my way, bottom line. I'm learning how to finally do shit my way. All right, second point is I remember, this is after therapy, just going for a walk, and I had this moment while listening to the book Confidence Gap, which I'm very close to finishing. Having a moment, I can't remember what the author said, but it made me realize that all my life, I didn't fucking need Jesus. I needed therapy. Now, I want to be clear, speaking for myself, like, I want to be clear. I say this in the context of someone that who, if he had gone to church with people who were using religion to better their lives, I'd be speaking differently. But instead, I was going to church with motherfuckers who would tell you shit like, all the answers are in the Bible. Oh yeah, where? Sure, there's some few quotes, there's a few lines that you can use as inspiration. But when you're dealing with some real shit, look, I was going through problems where I was going through situations where I remember telling myself, I feel like I'm surrounded by people who either don't have the answers or don't understand the question and leaving me out to dry. Or they would say shit like, I don't know, look it up in the Bible. And there's no fucking context. Like, I'm trying to figure out how the fucking flood has something to do with a situation that I'm going through. I guess I'm saying it was very unhealthy on their part to be like, I don't know why you're feeling insecure. Look it up in the fucking Bible or some shit like that. And there was no, you know, real shit that I'm going through, real help that I'm trying to get. And it's the kind that, you know, only a psychiatrist or a specialist can help you connect the dots. So yeah, it was just realizing that, fuck you, man. Like, if you this is the reason why we're going to have an extended church ratchetness section towards the end. But if you hear like this anger in my voice is real, is feeling like I'm among those who were raised with the Bible, or people who kept preaching about the Bible and couldn't fucking find the solutions, the answers they needed for their lives. And if your response to this is, oh, well, y'all should have looked harder because the answers were there, go fuck yourselves. You don't understand this. I'm thinking of this one poem I once saw online, and this guy was just talking about, it was a dedication to a kid that he read about who grew up gay in a church and killed himself. And the image, he hung himself, the kid. And the imagery the poet uses, he says, like the boy hanging, what's the word? Adjacent to a Bible. Adjacent. So he's like the image of him hanging, and next to him was a Bible. And basically how the poor guy, the poor soul, couldn't find the answers he needed to give him the hope he was supposed to find in this fucking book. Whoa, I'm getting emotional. All right, yeah. So, yeah, man. This is going back to people going through things. Don't listen to your pastor telling you that you just need Jesus. You might actually need therapy. And no, I'm not saying therapy is like the answer to all. But it does fucking help to have someone help you explain shit like, oh, you can't read. The reason why you can't use the Bible is because you can't read. You got dyslexia. You got ADD. You can't process information like the rest of us. You know what I mean? Like just, man, yeah. Did not need Jesus. I needed therapy. This last point is going to be a little difficult to cover. Yeah, I realize this is going to be a long episode, so buckle up. But yeah, no, this is a very tough this week in therapy. I had a moment where I wrote the note. I guess I was feeling my lows, one of my lows, my regular lows. And I remember making the note. I said, sometimes I wish my therapist would just say, dude, you're too broken. You're right. You're broken. Ain't shit I could do for you. Here's a prescription for some pills. See you later. Like, I mean, here's some prescription for some sleeping pills. Probably take 20 of them, and that's your solution. And I'm laughing, but you know, it's because I'm uncomfortable. But about what I'm saying is, and I'm realizing, I'm processing that thought is because I'm trying to figure out. I've had a lot of preoccupation with the concept of death, and I'm realizing, it hit me. It's not that I want to die. It's more I'm struggling to live. It's more that I'm realizing that I'm struggling to live. It's life is just fucking exhausting. And I was trying to, like, while going through that mood, it was difficult to listen to anything the author of Confidence Gap, what's his name, Russ Harris, had to say. By the way, it's a great book. I might summarize it later. And because one of what I like about him is he's got moments where he says, yeah, these self-help gurus will tell you this. I am not trying to be a self-help guru. It's as if he knows that you're past the point of listening to self-help gurus. But with that said, I was at the point where I didn't want to, because he was being positive. He was saying shit about channeling your fears and reaching goals. And I remember just not wanting to hear that shit because I was in that low. And I just realized that I was in a state where it's not that I want to die. Like, I had the image of myself on a plane, and it was going down, and I could see myself, like, changing my attitude about life and say, okay, I'm gonna get my shit together. All right, I wanna live. You know, I could see myself freaking the fuck out. But I'm realizing that, and I hate admitting this because people in my status with my privilege are not supposed to have these feelings, which is not enjoying their lives. Or in my case, feeling just exhausted by life. Like, I'm wondering, maybe I just need like a great vacation. I just need a vacation. I'm realizing since 2020, It's been a while since I've been on vacation. I've been out of the country. I did have time off from work, but I spent most of that time, that time off, fucking freaking out about what's going to happen tomorrow, or work calling and said, "Hey, man, we don't give a fuck about your doctor's notes. Get your ass in here," like, or something like that, or the insurance not kicking in. Or I was on long-term disability. That's what I'm trying to get at. And I was always worried that that check would not come in, or something would like fuck me up to be like, "Hey, you've been smoking weed. Oh, we're gonna cut that shit out." Anyway, yeah, I was constantly under stress. And I'm realizing, yeah, at first I thought it was being suicidal, but no, it's more an exhaustion with life. The reason I realized that is because I made myself a little playlist for this episode. I might share it with y'all. But I was listening. I was thinking a lot about the music I used to listen by Pac and his preoccupation with death. He rapped a lot about his exhaustion with life. And I remember telling myself, why do I have to give a fuck about life? He didn't. He embraced. He lived a life getting ready. He lived a life talking about Valar Morghulis, meaning all men must die, like he was embracing death. And I completely forget that what got me to snap out of it is realizing that Pac, sure, he became an artist and all that, but I grew up with way more privilege than Pac. I don't have the right to be like, "Ah, fuck, life sucks, life." Like, I'm not surrounded by death. I'm not, okay, racism is all around, but I am not worried about the cops breaking into my door. Well, okay, I'm vigilant about it. Yeah, I may be paranoid about it, but reality is, I don't have the same fears he had. I don't have the same inconvenience of being gunned down by rival gangsters. I didn't live a life where watching all my friends die, being at funerals on a regular basis. Like, I'm living a pretty good life for myself. I should admit that. But despite that, I'm just in this state where I just fucking feel so exhausted by life. Yeah, I gotta tell you, with this life, man, if it ain't trying to kill you, it's trying to make you crazy. I feel that's what life's about. Like, even social media, like the news benefit from sharing negative shit. Just pouring that shit. Like, fuck that. We're not trying to uplift humanity. And it's as if it's all traps to get you to lose your fucking mind. This is why sometimes I don't enjoy videos of people losing it or people acting crazy on YouTube. Because I tell myself, nah, man, fucking this life is so, could be such a challenge that sometimes, man, if the shit ain't trying to kill you, if it's not a bacteria, if it's not some fucking virus trying to kill you, if it's not some crazy asshole who found a gun and believes that God speaks through him trying to kill you, it's fucking trying to drive you nuts. And you have to have a tough skin about it. That's what everybody tells you. Just get over it. Deal with it. I mean, maybe for some of you, that's, you know, you're probably walking through it, but shit, when you're like the sensitive type, when you like pick up on like human struggles, it's like a fucking, life is just exhausting. That's what I'm just saying. I know I need to snap out of it. I don't want to hear shit about you preaching about, "Hey, life is worth living," and shit like that. That's not, you know, you're not going to help. You're not helping the situation. I'm just acknowledging a fucking moment in life, a feeling that a lot of us could relate to. Earlier on, when I talked about life of being a single man, it hit me that despite my struggle as a single man, as a single male, as a single person, like I started to think about the men who are single after a divorce. And maybe they did it right. Maybe they just were with the wrong person, but they're going through some shit. Or I actually worked with a guy and he just blurted out loud and said that he's a single father. So he's single, but he's responsible. He's got two people, two daughters he's responsible for. That's like a unique struggle. Like, I can understand. I'm sure those fellas are going through their moments of, okay, it's not that I want to die, but this fucking life is motherfucking exhausting. And yeah, I just want to point that out. I just had that moment that I felt the need to acknowledge that the state that I'm in right now, maybe later, like, I'll be more positive about this shit, but right now, this fucking life just feels motherfucking exhausting. And yeah, it does help to have like some kind of life force. This is where usually religion comes in, as a life force, as your reason to keeping on. Now I remember bringing it. Now what reminded me. So in the book Confidence Gap, he talks about this guy named Joe Simpson, who wrote a book called Touching the Void. Is that what it's called? Oh man, fucking B, man. I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but I'm kind of on a tangent right now. But what's it called? Touching the Void. I'm going to give you a... Yeah, Touching the Void. Hey, all right. Not bad for a brain who's like been polluted by weed. All right, okay. Touching the Void. And the author's name is Joe Simpson. Now, I'm going to give my quick summary of it. It's about a man who was climbing mountains and I'm assuming like dropped, but basically injured the fuck out of himself. And his friends... He was lost by... Oh, they made a documentary about this. Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah. From what I understand, homie was injured. And his friends were just went back to camp. And just assumed that he was dead. And Touching the Void is a whole story about how this motherfucker, broken leg, all injured and shit, made it back to base camp. And the will he needed to get back to it. I remember just... hearing the details of that story and being like, nah, fuck that, man. I would have just, fuck. I would have taken the easy way out. Based on the discussion, on the description that he gave me, the circumstances that he was. Yeah, it's a miracle that homie managed to like grab himself, convince himself to like crawl back. Homie crawled back in the fucking cold. Crawl back to base camp. People assumed that he was dead. But something in him kept telling him to keep going on, to keep at it. And I love the title, Touching the Void, because it's another way of saying, man, that motherfucker had faith. Faith. Yeah. So Joe Simpson, I'll read up on it later. But yeah, man. Yeah, Joe, I guess he didn't take the time to think about, if there's someone who has a right to complain about how exhausting life is, that's that man. But yeah, anyway, that's where I'm at right now, man. Fucking how life is exhausting. And shout out to Tupac, because a lot of his song was just talking about was him just explaining how life has him exhausted. But they bury me, especially if I die tonight. Yeah, but they bury me, send me to my rest. Headline. Yeah. Okay. All right. Where am I at? Right. Okay. By the way, I'm like not giving a fuck about the time right now. This is going to be one of those sermons where. The Holy Spirit's in me, and I ain't leaving till the Spirit leaves me. All right, okay. So this ends this week's this week in therapy. So knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. Okay, what else is on the agenda? All right, now I think I'm just going to talk about TV. Well, one of the things that helped me deal with my exhaustion of life, or that make life less painful, so to speak, is good television, man. Good television. For starters, I want to send a, rap music too. So first, I got to send a happy birthday to KRS-One. His birthday was, I believe, yesterday on the 20th. Yeah, man, you would think that I would have made one of his rap songs the title of this episode, but nah, life didn't work out that way. I just found out yesterday. While I was preparing the agenda, I just found out that KRS-One was his birthday yesterday. And I want to send a birthday shout out to the fictitious character, Avon Barksdale. If you haven't seen The Wires, we can't be friends. Avon Barksdale is one of the main characters in The Wire. Actually, the city of Baltimore is the main character. But in Avon Barksdale just plays like a very important character in there. And yeah, it was his birthday. One of my favorite quotes. I'm going to read one of my favorite quotes by him. He says... where did I put it? You only got to fuck up once. Be a little too slow, be a little too late, just once. And how you ain't gonna never be slow, never be late. You can't plan for that shit. Man, this is life. Yeah, Avon Barksdale plays like a drug kingpin. And I guess it's a tale. That quote is just a tale about how heavy the crown is. Cause he's like the big kingpin, but it doesn't matter. All right. I'm talking about, there's no good segue for this, but I'm also talking about how this is the 21st. And for those who, I'm also pretending like I'm not caring about the fact that tonight, a few hours from now, it's like 5:19, but yeah, a few hours from now, 4 hours from now, or 3 hours, 20 minutes, 40 minutes from now, House of the Dragon will be premiering on HBO Max. And for those who aren't aware, House of the Dragon is a prequel to the Game of Thrones series. Now, I had vowed on all seven gods, on the old and the new gods, to never ever fucking watch Game of Thrones again, never deal with any of their shit after that shitty last season that they gave us. But then they decided to come out with a prequel. Actually, oh, right. I did talk about this in the past episode. I forgot. It might have been the last one. How I'm pretending to not care. Actually, I think I said I'm looking forward to listening to watching it. But today I'm saying I'm pretending to not care. See, the thing with me is I hold fucking grudges. I'm still angry at that, at how shitty that last season was. The last episode of Game of Thrones was. That I'd vowed myself to never deal with anything Game of Thrones ever again. But now, the prequel, fuck. There's a lot of good shit being said about it. And, Game of Thrones is like the ex-girlfriend who cheated on me and is trying to get back into my life. And I'm pretending like I'm not looking at her nudes or her OnlyFans page. Or like, I'm pretending like there's no fucking way I'm going to forgive you. Whore! Anyways, yeah. So, good TV, man. There's, if I was a more mature man, I'd be telling you how I'm looking forward to watching this new series. And next episode, you're either going to hear me shit on it or actually talking about, you know what? I'm kind of glad that I held on to it. All right. But since I'm not the mature man, I'm going to be like, fuck those guys, man. Fuck House of Dragons. And man, 9 o'clock comes, I'm going to do something else. I'm full of shit. All right. Okay. Last comment that I want to say about good TV is I want to talk about this week. This week was also the, I just want to say a quick, no spoiler comment about Better Call Saul. So this week was the season. We had the season finale of Better Call Saul after six season, they ended it. Now, no spoilers. I will not say anything about it except to say that I enjoyed it. There's a lot of Better Call Saul fans who are like, after watching it, like feel good, but now are like going through that. What's that saying? Don't be sad that it's gone. Be happy that you enjoyed it, that it existed. Like they're going through that phase right now. But the only comment that I'm going to say about Better Call Saul, and I promise it's not a spoiler. I fucking hate when I'm listening to a podcast and these motherfuckers are in the middle of a spoiler. And because usually when I'm listening to a podcast, I'm doing something that involves me not being able to hit the pause button or the mute button or the fast forward button. So like, you know, probably my hands in the garbage, taking out garbage, whatever, something like that there. And these guys are just going out for spoilers, but not Be Black. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. The only reason I bring up Better Call Saul is because at the end of the finale, the cast, the major portion of the cast take their time to thank the fans for supporting them throughout, you know, all six seasons. Now, I gotta be honest, I don't know. For some reason, I was like, the fuck you thanking us for? We should be thanking you. But it just had me thinking about, like, it was beautiful for them to have said that. Like, it was like a good, it was a beautiful curtain call. Shit made me emotional. But it had me thinking about how, I guess I would feel grateful if I had as much a fan base like they did. Yeah, I guess the validation I guess I would feel like a sense of this is what I was made for. Like, I would feel good. I won't lie. I would feel good. I would be grateful for the fans. It just had me thinking about between the audience and the creator, who between them is the most grateful? Is it the audience? Because I can say for myself, I really enjoyed the Better Call Saul series. I may not have enjoyed as much the first three seasons, but that's a long story. It's only towards when I got towards the last three seasons that I was like, wow, edge on my seat type of shit. But yeah, no, I'm very grateful for the creators. Like, I'm applauding, standing ovation for that season finale. And I thank them for thanking us, but I'm also very grateful for like I said, life is fucking exhausting. And just that hour I dedicated to watching that episode just made it worth it. I should also say a shout out to The Boys. Before recording this episode, I just finished watching The Boys. And what's interesting is how the third season of The Boys, I finished it. I initially started, like, when season two ended, I went in with sheer skepticism. Not the same skepticism I have for House of the Dragons, but I didn't expect season three of The Boys to be good. But all my favorite podcasters were talking about how great it is, and I gave it a chance. And it actually took a few episodes to finally get to the point where, oh shit, this is setting up to be a really good season. And I just finished that, and I guess I should applaud the creators and everyone involved in that season. But yeah, no, just great TV, man, great TV. This is just a segment about great TV. All right, so I'm ending this segment with knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. Finally, church ratchetness. Church ratchetness. Now, what's church ratchetness, you might ask? And shout out to any of you who might be the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, fans of the Black Guy Who Tips, talking about, hey, you're fucking biting. You're stealing from them. And I want to be clear that I have nothing but respect for Rod and Karen. I would never diss them in that way. But I want to be clear that their segment is called Sword Ratchetness. Mine is called Church Ratchetness. They're McDonald's. I'm McDowell. I'm going to leave it at that. So Church Ratchetness is a segment that I dedicate to just talk shit about the church. Why? Because that's what us preacher kids do, man. If we're not raising kids, if we're not having kids all over the place, then you're probably like me on a podcast just ready to talk shit about the church. Right. Okay. So the first part of Church Ratchetness is... I'm not going to play this thing, but it's just this clip of, this is what I wrote. I said, what did I write? I said, I'm going to play a clip, and it's basically Christians are assholes. Christians are assholes for refusing, like, they have this inability to accept the possibility or the reality that not everyone is going to see Christianity, Jesus, or the shit they believe to be true the same way. So this clip is this woman who's just in an airport, and she's, it's going to be in the show notes, the clip. I'm gonna play a fragment. I'm not going to play the whole thing, right? She's in an airport, and she decides to start preaching.
Saved me. I tried to take my life twice. I called out to the God, the only living God, Jesus Christ. He came and he saved me, and I have never been the same again. Because when you give your life to Jesus Christ, you have life in abundance.
Yes. Amen.
He is the way, the truth, and the life. Everything. Sin.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to stop it there. Yeah, then the clip is just her. I didn't realize she had her friends around her. I'm assuming church members, and now she's walking around the airport. By airport is like the part where you're like waiting, like this is in the secure zone where you're waiting for your flight, and she's walking around preaching. And I see this scene because I remember being at church and hearing testimonies of people being, yeah, I just decided to share my testimony with the world and about my love for Jesus. Now, I remember being in that setting and believing that was a good thing. But what makes Christians assholes is not realizing that some of us have not had good relations or good experience with the church. Some of us are like fucking healing from that shit. And telling us shit like get over it or anything, basically not acknowledging that reality makes you a fucking asshole. makes you a bad person. I mean, it's so much like if there is a Jesus, you just want to give him a middle foot. Like, send me to fucking hell. When I die, send me to hell because I don't want to be around these crazy Christians. Now, I understand for her, this woman, she believes she's doing the right thing. She's doing a good thing that someone's going to might listen to what she says and might use Jesus to improve her life the same way. To improve their lives the same way she improved theirs. But the truth is, some of us don't need Jesus. We need fucking therapy. And the other thing is she refused to acknowledge is, okay, two things. She refused to acknowledge is how the rest, some of us are like wondering, how do I know you're not going to get on that fucking plane and Jesus is going to tell you that, hey, you need to bring everyone on that plane to me, so crash that motherfucker. Like, how do we know you're not going to lose your mind? Because it's not uncommon for people like you to do crazy shit like that. You're right now, you're proving yourself to be an unstable human being. And the other thing too is, you don't have to just, you know, as Christians, if you take, I don't give a fuck if you're taking offense to this episode. Yeah, suck my dick and both balls. Not half of them. No, one of my balls. Yeah. But think about it. Could our Muslim siblings do the same? I remember being on a plane after 9/11, and this brown dude walked in, and how fucking quiet it got on that plane. Dude, man, that dude didn't even look like he was a practicing or religious man. He was just a brown guy. But people, this was like probably a few days after 9/11, and homie gets on the plane, and all you can hear is his footsteps. Anyway, but I'm saying, imagine this poor guy is feeling the same fucking, yeah, I'm going to convert some motherfucker and bring him to Allah, or I'm not sure, you know, teach him about the love of Prophet Muhammad. Yeah, man, you start preaching in the airport in Arabic. You're going to freak fucking people out, man. All I'm going to say is, like, shout out to Malcolm X, where he talks about when it comes to religion, keep that motherfucker in your closet. I don't deny that for some people, religion, Jesus, Allah, whatever the fuck, that's their life source. That's what's allowing them to deal with, that's what's preventing them preventing them from life getting too exhausting or being exhausting for them. That's probably what's giving them la joie de vivre. That's what's, I understand that that's where your source of faith, but that's for fucking you. If I'm not healed by you preaching to me about how Jesus did some great things to you. Nah, if I want to know about your life force, I will ask you about it. But volunteering that shit, sticking that shit down people's throat is not the way to go. All you're doing is, and I believe there's a rule, Jesus talks about that, how you're going to be, you know, you're going to be, I'm going to fuck you up if you like all you're doing is making the rest of us not like you. And to be honest, like, I think about, like, the relationship with my parents. Like, I still haven't told them that. It's not that I'm atheist, but I'm, you know, I'm done with the church. Actually, I did tell them that. But how every time they say, hey, God bless you, shit like that. And, like, sometimes I just want to say, yo, that shit has no meaning to me, man. You're not helping my situation. Telling me shit, go with God. Like, I can't tell them shit like, I did not need Jesus, I needed therapy. They'll freak the fuck out because they don't have like the capacity to understand that reality, that for some people, church ain't the way. Or at least not in that moment that there is this, like, they can't understand. Like, not being able to understand that makes you a fucking asshole. And all you're doing is just associating Christianity with people who are just assholes. Or suckers, or Donald Trump suckers. Yeah. Next on church wretchedness, I'm gonna talk to you about Pastor Carlton. Oh, funny, I didn't make a link to this thing. Pastor Carlton Funderburk, right? Okay, let's see. Do I not have a link to this shit? No. Okay, hold on a second. Bear with me. Okay, shout out to those of you who know who I'm talking about and saying, yeah, what about that nigga? Hold on, I want to play Ooh, right. Okay. So let me play the... I see he cleared the original video. Motherfucker. Hold on. Let me find the... Yeah, there we go. Found it. Here we go. I want to play it. Okay. Before I play it, I'm going to say... Oh, this is the apology. Okay, hold on. Let me go for my notes. But let's pretend that, speaking of needing therapy and not Jesus, imagine being in a situation where you just lost your job, right? And or you're down on you're down to your last dollar, the economy's bad, you've been laid off, or you're struggling financially, you're like fucking, you're like, you're one of those people trying to decide between, do I feed myself or do I pay for the heat? Like you're like poor. You're like, yeah, struggling. And you show up to church hoping to find answers. And where did it go? And you hear, oh shit, I think he got rid of it. Hold on a second. I'm pissed. Where did I go? With fuck me, church wretchedness. Okay, oh there it is. This is it. Please be it. Okay. Nope, that's not it. Ah, very professional B. Nope, that's not it. There we go. Okay, you're down on your luck. You're struggling. And you walk in the church and you hear the pastor talking about
still
this.
Poor, broke, busted, and disgusted because of how you've been honoring me. I'm not worth your McDonald's money.
Come on.
I'm not worth your Red Lobster money.
Come on.
I ain't worth your St. John Nick. Y'all can't afford it no how. I ain't worth y'all Louis Vuitton. I ain't worth your Prada.
Come on.
I'm not worth your Gucci.
Come on.
Mother, ooh, I'm saying this, and I promise you, Deacon, it's not with respect and want. I'm saying it because I want you to understand just what God is saying. I even found out that Movado, you can buy a Movado watch in Sam's.
Yes, you can.
And y'all know I asked for one last year. Here it is the whole way in August. I still ain't got it. Y'all ain't saying nothing. Let me kick down the door and talk to my cheap sons and daughters.
Damn. So you hear a pastor go on a rant because people haven't been kicking in the collection plate. Like, I know there's, you know what? Fuck it. Nah, I'm not going to justify it or whatever. Like, because I've been in church and I've heard preachers. This is like, that's not the first time that I've heard preacher go on a rant because people aren't donating or giving in their tithes. And yes, yeah, as a pastor, you're responsible for the church. You're the one who's got to pay for the rent, and you depending on the tithes. Lazim. Come on, son, anglais. See, tithes. I don't know how to pronounce it, like T-H. But donations. You're relying on people giving in money. But not all of us, not everyone can. I don't know. Like, you need to control that fucking temper. Or you need to, I don't know, shake down someone for that money. But my point is, that's not the sermon a lot of people want to hear at that particular point in their lives, especially if you're fucking struggling. Anyways, long story short, I guess, I don't know if this was intentional, but long story short, like, I want to give him props that he ended up doing a second video where he apologized for that sermon. Well, he didn't apologize for that sermon, but basically just gave you the usual, like, look, man, there's a lot of context. Y'all don't, I apologize if this is how you, like, if your bitch-ass feelings, if your broke-ass bitch-ass feelings got hurt by my sermon. I honestly don't want to judge. I can't tell you if it was sincere or whatever. Like, maybe, like, the fact that I'm saying his name, like, bad press is good press. I just promoted his church. But I'm sure a lot of Christians might come to his aid. But yeah, so we ended up apologizing for that video. But it just hit me on how this day and age that we live in, I don't think it's going to be the last time a pastor is going to get online to apologize for their sermons. Because let me tell you something, man. These pastors, these pastors live in a bubble. They're used to being surrounded by people who believe God speaks through them. and ain't shit wrong I can say. And it's like, hey, baby, let me touch your titties. God told me to touch your titties. Yeah. Yeah, now, no, actually, I remember being at a church and having this fucking cracker-ass white boy, fuck Whitey, and we get in front of the pulpit or talk about how, talking to a church full of Christians, he knew he was in a church, so they weren't going to fuck with him. He said how Haiti is Satan's throne because of all that voodoo shit. Yeah, man, like, they say stupid, fucked up shit, and, in church, it's okay, but you put that in public, like, for a live audience to see, man, it comes out as something really fucked up. Basically, you know what these pastors are? Pastors are like the uncle telling you, don't tell your parents what's going on between us. Like, they create a relationship with you where they violate you, but they know that if you put that relationship into the light, it doesn't look good. So that's how I compare these pastors, man. So, yeah, it's not going to be the last. He's not going to be the last pastor who's going to get online and apologize for his sermon. Actually, I'm kind of surprised he apologized. He should do like Trump and just double down and be like, yeah, fuck y'all. That's how we preach. That's the Jesus that we preach in my church. Go fuck yourselves. Now, where's my money? Anyway, yeah. All right. I'm going to do one last. This is like off the cuff church rashness. And I live in the city of Ottawa. Actually, I wasn't going to cover this. But there's this group called the TUPC, and they've bought a church. Okay, what I'm getting at, they're associated with the convoy. They'll tell you they're not associated with the convoy, but when you go to their church, when you go to their establishment, there's a whole bunch of trucks or vehicles in front of their place with fuck Trudeau's or convoy signs saying that, hey, we're down with the convoy. But yeah, they're saying they're not associated with the convoy. But anyway, there's a group, they bought a church in a community of Lower Town, and the community doesn't want them. And what kills me is how they keep preaching about how, hey, no, we're about the community, we're about the people, but they fucking refuse to acknowledge the fact that the community does not want them there. It's like, the reason I'm bringing up the St. Bridget, the TUPUC, I think it stands for the People Posse, you know, the People Party of Ottawa, of Canada, the People Party of, and they're trying to make themselves out to be, no, we're a group of good. But the thing is, and it's like Christians, like stubborn Christians, is you shouldn't have to persuade people that you're there to help them out. Like when you're offering help and they don't want your help, and your first thought is to vilify them for rejecting your help, oh no, you're the bad person. That's sometimes to do some self-evaluation. And you know what? Okay, I'm going to stop this rant. I'm going to say this one last point I'm going to make on this, right? Is nothing that bothered me is how all the fucking, how come God is not telling you, hey, leave those people alone? Or, hey, you're the asshole in this situation. How come God doesn't have that conversation with people? No, it's always not, nah, do my bidding. You're right, they're wrong. Yeah, like when you find yourself getting into a conversation, an argument, a debate with a person, and your first thought is, I ain't gonna listen to what they have to say. Like, your last intention in that argument is to understand the other person's perspective. Eh, you're a fucking asshole. You're an asshole. That's all I'm gonna say. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna leave it at that. You're a fucking asshole. And also, knowing nothing in life but to be legit, don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. Actually, you can quote me on me saying Christians are assholes. Fuck that, yeah. I'm willing to take that with me to the afterlife. Finally. All right. Okay, I'm a little over, but yeah, okay. So finally, for today's segment, I'm going to play a clip and end with this clip. And it's more for me than it is for you. Okay, I might make one quick comment about it, but yeah. It's more for me than it is for you. And this is my TikTok clip of the week. The creator removed the clip, but so it was stitched by another creator. Their name is, sorry, okay. The creator who's stitched this clip is called Blessed Kenny. Bless Kenny or Bless Kenny? Yeah, Bless Kenny. And the person who you're going to hear is the cemetery. It's called the Cemetery Man. The Cemetery Man. Yeah. Anyways, it's some words of wisdom, and I'm going to play it, and we're going to end with that. Okay? All right. Here we go. It's 2 minutes, 37 seconds. Bear with me.
Good afternoon, TikTok, and welcome to William's Walk Through the Mausoleum. Do you know what happens after your funeral? In a few short hours, the crying will die down, and your family will be busy making arrangements for food or drink for your friends and relatives. Some of your relatives will start discussing current events over coffee, and some people will call your family to tell them that they can't make it in person because of an emergency. Some people will secretly start making travel arrangements because life is just too short. And someone in your family will start arguing that they contributed more financially to the funeral than others did. Eventually, the crowd is going to go their separate ways. And in the coming days and weeks, your cell phone might ring on occasion from people who didn't realize that you've died. Your employer will begin to search for your replacement. In a few days, your children will go back to work because their bereavement leave has run out. In a month, your spouse will be watching a comedy on TV and start to laugh. You'll be forgotten at an astonishing pace. Everyone's life will go back to normal. There'll be new elections, new scandals, and the traffic on the daily commute will be the same. And the Super Bowl will go on just as planned. Meanwhile, the first anniversary of your passing will be celebrated in a grand manner. But in the blink of an eye, years are going to have gone by, and there'll be very few people left to remember you. One day, looking at old photos, a friend might remember you. In your community, of the hundreds of people you became acquainted with, only one person may remember you and think about you sometime. Now tell me, if people will forget you so easily, then who are you living your life for? Who are you worried about? You spent your whole life worrying about what people will think about you. They don't, and they won't. So live your life for you. Have a good afternoon.
All right. Now, I don't know. Some of you might have been depressed by this shit. But it just reminded me that part of what makes... or what's been making my life so exhausting is I have this bad habit of my part to give a fuck about other people's opinion. I don't know. It's a long, like, I'm not the person you want to preach to about, hey, you shouldn't give a fuck about other people. No, look, I was born this way. I was designed to basically caring about other people's opinion. That, on the long list of things that made life exhausting, is just that. So that's why I felt that was like a powerful thing to say. Hope it didn't depress you, but and I hope it gave you something to think about, man. Something to marinate. Let that shit marinate, man. Let it marinate. So this concludes. Oh, knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. Now this concludes today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can find me on Twitter at bblizak. The name is at bblizak. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address, shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And as always, and like usual, till further notice, to subscribe to the podcast, just use the RSS feed. Just use the RSS feed for now. And as always, thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcasts. And don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit. But be kind to your favorite podcast. Peace.